Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where health junkies get their weekly fix of tips, tools, and techniques to have limitless energy, sharp minds, and fit physiques for life. Hey, health junkies. On this episode of the Health Fix Podcast, I'm interviewing Jason Shires. He's a psychotherapist. He's a certified transformative coach. He's gone through the full journey from childhood trauma to addictions, mental health problems, jails, psychiatric care, and he's even done the 12-step recovery programs. And you know what? He found that none of those were as helpful as being present with his own thoughts. Now, you might be thinking, oh my gosh, my thoughts are what drive me crazy. Yeah, guess what? There's a lot of truth in that statement. Now in this podcast, I share a lot about my personal struggles with mental health and even being the fat kid when I was younger and coping with food to try to help get myself to feel whole. So here's a crazy, crazy thing that I want you to just think about going into this podcast. I want you to be open to the possibility that the stories you tell yourself may be why you feel the way you do. The stories you tell yourself about, I'm not good enough, I'm fat, I'm this, I'm that, I'm depressed, I'm anxious, giving yourself labels, or even if a doctor has given you a label, even if I have given you a label as a diagnosis. Put it this way, the insurance company has to have that. I don't. And I don't want you guys to have labels either as to what is going on. There is nothing wrong with you. You are perfect and whole as you are. And here's the thing. You have power to heal yourself. You have a very incredibly smart body. And it can balance itself and it can also reprogram itself. And in particular, change all those programming things that you've told yourself over and over in your head for years and years and years. So, going to this podcast, I want you to be open to the fact that maybe some of the things you tell yourself aren't necessarily true and can be changed to help you have some peace and comfort and get rid of a lot of these things that are bugging you in life. All right, let's introduce you to Jason Shires. Hey there, health junkies. I have Jason Shires on, and we're going to be talking about one of the things that I think is kind of shoved under the rug quite a bit. It's addiction. And in this case, Jason's going to talk to us a little bit about his story because he's coming from the place of a certified psychotherapist and transformative coach, but he also struggled with addiction. And I think it's great to kind of go between the two lines of what it's like to be in the midst of things, but also what it's like on the outside, you know, looking in. So we're going to dive into that so you guys can get a really great perspective of addiction from different angles. Jason, welcome to the Health Fix Podcast.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to, I always say, I'm looking forward to hearing what I'm going to say because I don't actually know.
It's fun. It's fun because, you know, sometimes like really gold stuff comes out on these podcasts and I love it. So, you know, I think for a lot of people, you know, that have been drawn towards helping in psychotherapy, there's been certain things in their life that have kind of drawn them to it. But I'm always intrigued when it's a second choice. You haven't been like, oh, I wanted to be a psychotherapist since I'm 12. You had to kind of go down the hard road to get there, the hard knocks of sorts. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about, we'll go through the whole story. I'd love to hear, tell us a little bit about what was that point that you were like, oh, wow, I think I might have a problem here. And then tell us, give us the scoop from there. Because I think folks dabble in their head about, do I have a problem? Do I not? Do I not? And just breaking it all down.
Yeah, there wasn't actually much of a memory of any life where there wasn't a problem for me. So it's quite easy, you know, it's kind of like, there wasn't like I do get people coming to me as clients saying, oh, I just started being an alcoholic when I was 30. And I just go, really? You know, it's kind of like, because it never starts there. You know, it never starts there. It doesn't, don't wake up one day at 30 and decide to become an alcoholic because you had an end of a relationship or something. It's always manifesting itself throughout your life, even if it hasn't yet got to that point of being about drugs and alcohol or gambling or sex or pornography or something. You know, so for me, my earliest memories were of my dad going out one day and never coming back. You know, he was killed in an accident. And from there, Like all the memories of that are particularly painful and kind of and tragic, and sad. And from there, just coping, finding a way, and food was my friend, because while I lost my dad physically, I kind of lost my mum mentally because she was coping with the grief and she was left with two children and she struggled in her own ways, to escape from, her experience. So I was pretty much left on my own at that age. That's how it felt, So food became my friend. It became my comfort. It became my escape from what looked like my life, like not cognitively or rationally at this point, just in a seamless flow of sensations and perceptions and experiences, not making any sense of it at that age, but just literally finding a way to cope, with uncertainty as a child. You can imagine now, like me, I've got a 5-year-old boy, it's kind of, and particularly now at this time, he gives me so much reflection, looking at him and thinking of myself at that age, it makes my heart ache so much, like seeing it and thinking of my own tender self at that point, and how I made sense of losing a parent and the massive impact that that has, So food makes sense, right? I mean, if we're infinitely resilient and infinitely creative as a species, it's kind of like then no matter what happens, we find a way to cope with it, regardless of whether it's socially acceptable, normal, or whatever it is, whether it's given a label by the psychological profession. Just finding food at that point as a way of coping makes complete sense, right? If I'm having a dis-ease inside of me, an emptiness, a discomfort, and food gives me a sense of okayness, then of course I'm going to do that, that's where the start of it came. And then I got thrown into the system, I got like my first psychiatric diagnosis at 9 years old. But like looking back, when I did my psychotherapy training many years ago, they said to me, "Why don't you apply for your medical records?" So there's a thing here in the UK where you can go back, and I got all these records from the 80s of all these psychiatric reports that I had when I was medicated, what dosages I was put on, what they thought of what was wrong with me at the time. There's not one mention of grief.
Really?
There's not one mention of grief. There
Wow.
was a mention of me being slow and having learning difficulties, which wasn't true because I went to private school and I scored one of the highest possible scores and was given a full scholarship to a private school. It's kind of like, but that's kind of like, that's regardless. And there's another thing that I teach is that intellect cannot save you. Like no matter how clever you are, you can't think your way out of addiction. It's kind of like, it's an internal dis-ease with an external process or substance to as a function of dealing with that dis-ease. But as you're thrown into the system, like I was, it starts to become labeled and pathologized, this normal human response to adversity, and there's a whole industry built around it. There's pharmaceutical companies and medication and people writing prescriptions and giving labels, and there's a list of codes in a book that you can give people that present with normal human response to adverse circumstances,
That's a huge point you make about normal responses. It's almost like we have that system now that has that we have to label it, which drives me nutty. Why do we have to give a label to anything? And normal responses, we haven't normalized it. It's almost as if we're trying to create a bunch of robots who should be happy and and content with everything. And if we're not, then there's something wrong. And you've even, you've hit that on the point. And, it sounds like in the 80s, I'm in my 40s now. Sounds like we're kind of in the same age range there. I find that a lot of folks in our age range were kind of labeled very similarly and had that kind of quick judgment, let's put it that way, by someone. So wow, okay. So at 9 years old, already given a diagnosis, were you already on medication at nine?
Yeah, I was put on medication then.
Wow.
I didn't actually know that until 10, 20 years ago when I got all the reports. You know, I didn't remember that, but I do remember a block of my life being missing around that age, you know, that I just can't remember. And I thought, I wonder if that was down to the whatever they used as medication, you know, not so much the SSRI type stuff that they do these days. I think antidepressants were perhaps different at that time, you know. But like the labeling stuff, it's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, we go to these professionals with this symptoms of normal adversity. Here's what happened and here's what I'm experiencing. And they go, oh, how long have you been doing it for? How intense is it? Oh yeah, you've got this, right? Whatever the label is. But then you go away and you start saying, well, I do these behaviors because of the label, what I've been given. Yeah. Right, but the label was only ever the explanation for the behavior. It was never the cause. You know, it's like, but we really walk around thinking that the label is the cause, but it was never the cause in the first place. It was only a subjective opinion based on someone's personal thought about what it is I'm presenting with. You know, there's no medical evidence to support the label that I'm given. So how could it ever be the cause, you know?
Oh, you know, that is... I can't say enough about that statement you just made, because I feel like I see that every day when I've got patients coming in to my office. It's, I have depression, therefore I am a depressed person. And then the whole identity just becomes this diagnosis, whether it's that, whether it's chronic pain, whether it's whatever it may be, but no mention of the real cause. Wow. Yeah. Good stuff here. Good stuff here, guys. I hope you're listening to this and maybe rewind it and put it, come back again, because this is a big deal. You need to hear this. This is nothing you're going to hear in the conventional medicine world. That's for sure.
Yeah. I guess what I do see for diagnosis is that it's a label of where we are. You know, it's not necessarily who we are. You know, yes. I like that. It's kind of like, there are times when we have struggling experience, you know, and it's like, it's where we are. And my story, as I get into it a bit further, you know, is really about the discovery of true nature, you know, like who we are really, you know, beyond the labels, beyond the symptoms, beyond the presenting behaviors, you know. And, you know, to say a bit more, you know, about after that, you know, like it was just chaos for many years, you know. I don't need to talk too much about the thing, but, you know, it was from an early age, as soon as I could steal money and go out, you know, I stole a lot of money from home. I bought bikes, motorbikes, all sorts of things. I was constantly finding where my mum hid any money, and I would take it. You know, if it wasn't nailed down, I would take it and sell it. And the home life was chaotic and sort of, I don't think my mum had a clue what to do with me, you know, and I found drugs as a very early teenager, you know, and heroin was the first drug that I took. Don't know how or why. Many people have a progressive journey. I didn't. I was just in that way. And that started 10 years of crime and jails and institutions and psychiatric restrictions and all sorts of, you know, like craziness. And, you know, I was banned from home. I didn't go home. I lived in homeless hostels or people's cars or sofas or anything, you know. And I lost connection with everyone, you know, because I wasn't safe to be around, because I just took anything that I could, because I was just desperate for drugs, you know. And at the end, I was stealing joints of meat out of supermarkets, you know, just trying to get enough to buy a little bit of drugs to feel okay. But I knew it was like, I was sick and tired, you know. I was really sort of couldn't continue in this way. And I went into rehab because that was all that anybody knew, you know. It was a 12-step rehab at the time. And I went in like completely oblivious, and I just believed everything I was told. Oh, you're an addict. You've got this thing called the disease of addiction, and you can't ever drink or use drugs again. But one day at a time, you can recover and you can be okay as long as you do these processes, you know. It's like, so I spent the next 22 years, you know, going to meetings saying I'm an addict, you know. It's kind of like, but never really achieving a sense of peace internally, you know. And there were many times that I identified with multiple fellowships. You know, I went to OA for my eating because as soon as I put down the drugs, the eating that I'd used as a comfort as a kid came back, you know. So I was in rehab. They put me on, as an example, they put me on lunch duty, and there was a lift between the basement where the kitchen was and the first floor where the dining room was. And I would eat as much food as I could between the lift, get the door closing in the basement and opening at the top. And I was, and on the way back down, when I was clearing the food, I would see what people would be leaving as I was eating, because I was going to eat it, you know. And it's like, and I'd hoard food, and I'd eat food out of bins, and I'd do anything I could just to fill the feeling of emptiness that I had inside of me when you took the drugs away. Because the drugs, if you think about it, drugs are never the problem. We become fixated and focused on behavioral change and looking at the drugs and coping with the eating habits and so on. But they're just normal human response to adversity. If I've got a di internal dis-ease and I use a substance or a process to help me cope with my internal dis-ease, that's a self-correcting body-mind system that I live in. You know, of course, it finds a way to release the chaos that's happening internally. You know, like the valve of a pressure cooker. You know, that's what it is. That's what the eating is. That's what the drugs are. They're the release of the valve of a pressure cooker. There's a misunderstanding going on internally. You know, it's like, but I'm creating a busy mind and an image of myself, you know, as a damaged trauma survivor, you know, in my own mind, and then I'm escaping from it. And that's kind of the process that's going on. So, you know, even in rehab, when I was back to the food, and then I was into toxic relationships and obsessions with the gym and everything, you know, backwards and forwards with all that process behavior stuff. But it was okay because I wasn't using drugs, and I was going to meetings, and everyone was telling me how well I was doing just by not taking drugs. I had no clue then. And my behavioral stuff is what drove me into becoming a psychotherapist, because I thought, oh, this addiction recovery thing is good. I'm not using drugs anymore, but my behavior is causing me problems, you know, not realizing that the whole thing was part of the same, you know, it was all part of the same internal dis-ease. So I started having a bit of psychotherapy, and I thought, I'm going to become a psychotherapist. That'll help me resolve everything. You know, it's like, obviously, if I learn to what it is these people are really doing rather than me going to them, you know, it's kind of like, then I'll be okay.
I like the psychology behind
Yeah,
that.
it's always that way. It's always the wounded healer, you know. It's always like people trying to get something for themselves. I think almost everyone that I met was searching and seeking for something that was missing on the inside, you know. Like, so like, you know, I've so many different qualifications and credentials, because I would never find the happiness that I wanted in the training that I did. You know, it's kind of like I went through different thing after different thing after different thing. And, you know, each time I would think, well, I don't feel any different. You know, I still feel the same. It's kind of like I could sit in the dark, you know, with anyone in their trauma, in their darkness. I could be present with somebody, you know, I could feel someone's pain. I was intuitive and attuned to people, you know, but I didn't know where the light switch was. Nobody knew where the light switch was. No one knew how to say, all everyone coming to me wanted only one thing. They wanted to experience peace of mind and contentment, but I didn't know where that was because I hadn't experienced it for myself.
Huge, huge statement you just made right there, because I think that's part of the problem we have with many psychotherapists, counselors, etc. right now. They have never experienced peace of mind, so it's very hard for folks who are going day in day out, you know, to talk therapy to really get anything out of it, even cognitive based or whatever type of therapy it is. It Until you can understand that peace of mind yourself, I feel like you can't necessarily. And I'm not knocking on any counselors. I'm not knocking on anybody right now. What I'm getting at is sometimes we have to go through the misunderstandings. And Jason, of course, has a podcast, Misunderstandings of the Mind, that really kind of bring this whole concept out. Same thing goes, and I'm going to call doctors out, like myself. I really only figured out all my mental crap in the last 5 years. And I'll own it that I've probably messed up some folks because of my peacefulness that I've been finding in the last couple of years. So I'm gonna put that out there.
That's beautiful because it's okay to be human, you know? And me too. You know, I'm definitely hold my hand up to being completely human. You know, even now I say to my clients sometimes, yeah, I shouted at my kids the other day, you know, oh, God, how could, what, you're a therapist and you help people and you still shout at your kids? You know, it's kind of like, yeah, I'm human too, and it's okay to be human, you know. We all have moments of being triggered and caught up in it. Yeah, the way that it doesn't happen so often and so on, but it's kind of like, but I just want to own that, like you, that real humanness of that there's no, you know, enlightened lotus position sitting cross-legged with our palms up thinking everything's all wonderful, you know. It's no one's excused from the human experience, you know. Yeah. So the other thing about that was about the therapist was that a lot of my friends, because I was in recovery, it's like everyone seemed to think the only thing they could ever do was be a counselor or a therapist because they were in recovery, and they, oh yeah, it's easy to talk to people about addiction. That's all I've got to do. You know, it's kind of like, and the thing was, I knew them personally, like, so that they on the front, you know, they were taking on clients and so on and stuff like that and working in treatment centers, but I knew them. I knew they were struggling. You know, I knew they weren't happy. You know, it's kind of like no one had really found real peace and happiness, you know. So, and I always was a endless truth seeker, you know. It's kind of like, so I never gave up at the qualifications, no matter how many I got. At some point I kind of thought, you know, and I started doing other things, like I did the Landmark Forum, I did the Hoffman process, I did these Vipassana silent meditations, you know, and it was like, and I did all of Tony Robbins' courses. I flew all over the world doing that because I was just seeking and seeking. I had this feeling that there was something, some experience of finding peace, you know, that I just had missed yet. And while there was part of me that knew, there was another part of me, I guess, cognitively, that I was resigned. You know, I was kind of like had given up on ever being happy. I thought, I am fucked, so to speak, you know, and it's like, and I'm never going to be happy, you know, and I'm going to be endlessly seeking relationships and having destructive relationships, and I'm going to be endlessly trying to lose weight. I mean, there's so many things happened for me. Like in these years, you know, I had seven cosmetic surgeries, right? Trying to change the outside of my body to fix my internal happiness. Because I really had this eating disorder my whole life. Or I hate the word eating disorder, I don't like these labels, but it's just so people understand what I'm talking about. I had this relationship with food and my body. You know, my body was always never happy with it. And I couldn't stop the way that I ate, you know. It's like, so I'd had all these surgeries on the hope that one day I would wake up feeling happy with the shape of the outside and that would change the inside, you know. So this was the length that I had gone to fix my internal experience by doing things on the outside, you know. So all this stuff was going on like at the same time, you know. And after I'd been to Tony Robbins, I joined this personal development group where everyone was like, yeah, get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, get a trampoline and a plunge pool and force yourself to the grind 18 hours a day. You can do it. Don't be a victim of life, positive thinking, and all the shit, you know, that people lump onto your to-do list that's not look like it's not long enough already, you know, for all of us, you know. And you know, okay, that's what it is. I'm not doing enough. I've got to do more. I've got to create more. You know, it's like, but internally, you know, just collapsed emptiness. You know, like with a feeling of longing for love. You know, and I joined this personal development group. I met a friend, and she said, I've got a login for this website, and if you log in, there's some videos on there, and you could share them in this personal development group so everyone could watch them. I went, oh yeah, I could do that, no worries. So logs into this thing, and I looked through these list of courses, and one of them was called The Path of Effortless Change by Michael Neal. And I thought, I just love the word effortless, you know. It's kind of like, I thought my life has been anything but effortless. In fact, every day feels like a grind, you know. It's like, it really does. It feels like I wake up every day and go, oh, God, you know, another day. And it was just that name, The Path of Effortless Change. I thought, you know, this is the one I've got to share. I didn't plan on watching it, by the way. I thought it'd be good for everyone else, you know. It's kind of like, I'm gonna, maybe I'll watch it one day, but this is the one anyway. So I'm kind of trying to rip off this video, and I can't rip it off, you know. I can't download it, I can't share it, I can't do anything with it. So I thought, the only way I can share it with people is if I screen record it, you know. So I set up this laptop next to me with a screen screen recorder on, and it says you need the volume on so the microphone can hear the sound, like, and record the screen and the sound at the same time. So I find myself mesmerized, like only planning on to record this video of what this guy's saying, not knowing why, just feeling this sense of there's something he's saying, there's something he's speaking to in me that I really need to know more about. And so I didn't think any more of that at the time. I got the video, I shared it with people, and I said, I really like this guy. And there was a year later, I was going to LA for this event. And I thought, I remember that guy, Michael Neal, he lives in LA, So I looked on his website and he's got this event on the times when I'm there in LA, And I was just like, this is such a serendipitous experience going on here that I have to go, And it was so expensive, but I didn't even have the money, and my friend gifted me the money, to go. And
Awesome.
I thought, wow, that's another thing. And I went there with this kind of, as we do, like thinking I knew a thing or two about change, because I'd had this long list of letters after my name and credentials and all this other stuff, and years of change and decades of 12-step and addiction work and all that. And I was like, what can this guy tell me? It's kind of like, so I turn up with my book. Bear in mind, I've been in Tony Robbins 18 hours a day, previous year, a few months before, expecting these really intense, long things because it was so expensive, and like I turn up there and he said, oh, it starts at 10 o'clock. It's 2 days. It's mega expensive. And when I turn up at 10 o'clock, he says, we're going to have 2 hours for lunch and we're going to have 2 half-an-hour breaks. And I'm there going, 2 hours for lunch, 2 hours, that's 3 hours. We're only here for seven. It's kind of like, and I've paid a fortune for this. It's kind of, how am I going to get my money's worth in this short amount of time? And so I've got my notebook out, and I'm getting angrier, as it's like thinking, we haven't got much time for him to give me the information that I need to fix myself. That's what was going on inside of me. And he said to me, and I always remember this, and I always talk to people about it. It's like he noticed, and he said to me, can you just be here? Oh, what does that, what a fucking gift is that? Like no one had ever said to me just to be present. It's kind of like he said to me, you don't need to remember any, you don't need to write anything down, because if I say something that's important to you, you'll remember it. You don't have to write it down, And you don't have to work out if this is like something you know, or if you've heard it before, or if it's different, or if it's like CBT or something else. He said, all I'm asking you is just to be present and see what happens. And for some reason that gift like gifted me the still feels like I still feel the sadness of it, It gifted me that ability just to switch off my own analytical head that had never really served me in finding peace of mind, and allowed me just to listen, just allow words just to drift into me, and just for me to reflect on and consider. Because the only thing, because I knew so much cognitively and kind of theoretically, that everything comes in and we filter it and we go pigeonhole, spit it out. It's kind of like useful later, useful now, or not useful at all. That's the mind's function, right? It's kind of like that's what it does. We're doing this million times a second all the time with information, and like everything good that we hear about who we really are, our true nature, doesn't happen cognitively. It happens beyond the cognitive filter, So it like, so I was able to let these words just wash over me. I have no idea what I heard that week, that 2 days, It's kind of like, but yeah, after those 2 days, I went and sat down outside this Airbnb, and it was like, it was on a Friday afternoon in LA, and the sun was going down, and I was just sitting there feeling this sense of peace, and I thought, wow. I don't know what's happened, It's kind of like my life has changed in 2 days. And it was like, and my head always wants to play catch up, it's going, well, you've not lost weight, haven't got a new relationship, you haven't got more money in the bank. It's kind of like, because these are all the areas that we think are going to make us happy, right? It's kind of like, and it's like, in fact, nothing has happened. And it's kind of like, what is this? And I could listening to the birds chirping, and it was like, I thought, it's like I've woken up out of a bad dream, it's like I've come round out of a nightmare, and I tell you, I was that certain that my life had changed, that I'd had a therapist for 7 years, and it was very hard for me being a therapist to find a therapist. I went through hundreds of phone calls and emails trying to find people, and I'd found one that I liked, and I'd been with her for 7 years. And I ever emailed or called from LA, and I said the next session will be the last session. I don't need it anymore, because I knew that that seeking for my life was the seeking for myself, was the experience of me experiencing me beyond the thought story that I told myself every day about being a childhood victim of trauma and an addict and all these things, all these labels and all these diagnoses that had been given over the years that had been lumped onto the identity that I thought I was, And it's so much crumbled in those few days. It's kind of like I knew I wouldn't practice psychotherapy in the same way. I knew there was no way of getting, I knew the past had gone and there was nothing to resolve there. I knew my life was going to change. I knew that I wouldn't go back to meetings. I never went back to meetings. It's like
Yeah.
7 years ago. It's kind of like I didn't need it. I wasn't an addict, and it was known I didn't need to go there. It wasn't true. I just knew that. It was only later. It was only later I did Michael's Super Coach Academy and trainings in LA, over a few years, a couple of times. And it was only then that I started to learn how to, what I do now is I point people to their true nature. I help people see beyond the story of themselves, which is where all suffering is created. All suffering is created. I saw that I was playing the lead character of a movie that played every day, all day in my own mind, but it wasn't me. It wasn't who I was. It was just who I thought I was. And, don't believe your own thinking because it's not true. It's kind of like no one had ever said that to me. I just, every thought I had thought was a reflection of who I was, So much fell away, so much freedom, so much change in perspective happened there, in every area of life, everything changed from then on. And it's been a, there's more, but it's been like a magical evolution of understanding, of myself and working with people and so on, and sort of seeing how, for the eating disorder disappeared as well. I mean, 40 years psychiatric care, also chronic pain. I know you mentioned chronic pain. I'd had 20 years of going to chiropractors. I'd been in 10 MRI scanners. I had all sorts of L1 to L6 was herniated. I literally couldn't go out without pain medication. It's kind of like everywhere I went, and it was only on the, it was the third time I did a one of the intensives of the coaching training, and I was in Prague. And I didn't even realize this had happened. And they said, "Oh, does anyone want to stand up and talk about what they've got out of this training?" So I stood up and I took the mic and I said, "I just, this thought came to me. It's kind of like I haven't even got pain medication with me. It's kind of like I did not leave the house without pain medication. It's kind of like, in fact, I've been in Prague for a week without realizing that I didn't even have pain medication with me. I would never go to, I wouldn't even leave the house, let alone another country, without enough, like opiate-based medication or something, just in case, because I had, my back would have these spasms." And it's all the, it's kind of like I started to see how the mind-body system, the stressful thinking creates the inflammation, and the inflammation creates, even though there is a physical issue, it's kind of like just makes it a million times worse, And since that time, I've lived pretty much pain-free.
Wow. I think that's a really huge point you make because I, as an acupuncturist and a doc, I work with a lot of folks that have pain, but I also, I talk a lot about what does this pain mean? Pain is often, yes, there for us in the acute sense of, yep, something got jacked up. But after that, when it lingers, now I'm going, back to where's it in the body and what does that mean emotionally for you? And I'll often start to kind of go back through people and kind of talk to them about, okay, where's the source of this? And one of the big things that, in addition to chronic pain and that you've mentioned, is the eating issues, the overeating and using food as your comfort. I think it's a huge, I mean, think about it. Like you were saying, you were young and that was your coping mechanism. And we see that because like a 3-year-old's not going to get a hold of heroin. That's just not going to happen. And I mean, it, maybe it has, but it's not as common. Let's put it that way. So it's the quickest thing we can get. And then the sugar. And then after that, when we can get a hold of things, it kind of evolves from there. So I'm looking back into how you said your pain went away, but also the desire to overeat went away.
Yeah.
And we have many women and men who are going through all these programs for weight loss and wondering why they don't achieve the weight loss. They can't stick with it. They think they have poor willpower.
Yeah.
This is huge.
Yeah. It's what I call an inside out experience, not an outside in, you know. It's like that, you know, when I work with somebody with weight loss, it's kind of like, I never talk to them about food. And it's kind of like at some point in the process, they go, yeah, that thing, yeah, it just stopped. You know, it's kind of like, I don't do that. I don't really feel the need to do that anymore, you know. And it's like, because it's the wrong place to look. You can't take away someone's coping mechanism, you know. And it's like, people have just become, because of this pathologizing of normal human response to struggle, you know, to stress, to life, that, and we found a coping mechanism, you know, it's kind of like, then we're trying to do behavioral change, you know, at the level of the coping mechanism. It's kind of like, I'm wondering why willpower doesn't work. It's never going to work, because we're always going to use the coping mechanism at some point. It's nothing to do with your willpower. It's to do with the fact that the, you know, the neurological pathways, the habitual response to discomfort on the inside is to do this behavior, because I get a moment, even if it's just a momentary feeling of peace or escapism. Now, when you start to understand and make sense of your own experience, so you're not suffering and struggling, you're experiencing more joy, peace and contentment, what you always wanted, then you don't need a process to fix it, because it's already good. Nobody ever, I often say when I do talks, no one ever woke up joyful, looked out the window and went, oh my God, what an amazing day. I think I'm going to use crack cocaine today. No one did that.
No, you don't need to escape.
No, there's nothing to escape from.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. And this concept of escaping is kind of what I talk with folks a lot about. And I think, you know, you've hit on something incredible. And maybe even with all these courses, and I want to just see what your thought is on this, because I'm a serial course taker of everything and anything, only because I feel like it was part of my quest for a long time to figure out what's wrong with me, but also help other folks. But on that pathway, I felt that even the course itself, like how you were sitting down, you're like, I have to write, you know, I got to get all the information. Do you feel like courses themselves were escapes too? Like a way to escape?
Yeah, I might term it slightly differently, like spiritual seeking or something, you know. It's kind of like personal development. There's no self to develop to start with, you know. It's kind of, the self is just a conceptual and theoretical idea through the lens of your thinking that you experience on a daily basis. You know, it's like Jason is a figment of my own imagination on an, and that's so easy to spot, because today, if I'm feeling good, Jason's great. He's doing great work in the world. He's helped so many people. If I'm feeling shit tomorrow, Jason's a piece of shit. You know, it's kind of like, he's not good enough. He can never get anything right. He can't really help anyone. How can it be so different on two given days? It can only be a reflection of my state of mind. It's nothing to do with the truth, you know, of who I am. The truth of who I am is that, you know, I'm the awareness of those things. I notice them happening within me, but they're not who I am. And the course taking and spiritual seeking and personal development just looks more superior to taking drugs and eating food. But it's what are we in search of, right? We're in search of the same thing. We're in search of ourselves. We're in search of the ultimate answer. We're in search of peace of mind, or we're trying to develop this imaginary self that we think we are. So, because it looks like this imaginary self that we think we are can attain this state of eternal happiness that exists at some point in the future, but it can't possibly exist at any point in the future, because the only moment there is this one. Like, life is now. Life is the days that pass in between when I think I'll get there and now. That's life, you know. Every single day when we wake up, the love that we give to people, the present moment that we share, the experiences that we have, good or bad, you know, nice or not nice, it's kind of like, that's our life. Our life is not happening at any point later. So the courses are always in search of. Now, I'm not saying it's not a good. I mean, of course, if something makes sense to you, you want to learn to be a doctor, then take medical school. You know, it's kind of like makes sense. Nothing wrong with that. You know, it's like, but if it really looks to me that when I get this, then I'll be happy. You know, it's kind of like that's an illusion. That's the trap. That's the rat race. Because everyone is trying to get their ducks in a row and achieve this external status and thing about something that's just imaginary. You know, it cannot be improved. It cannot, in the same way, it can't be degraded either. You know, we are perfect as we are. Our life experience is perfect. All struggles are divine, you know, because they're leading you back to this realization of who you are. You know, that's all struggles are pointing us back there. They're pointing us back home inside ourselves. Every search on the outside is for ourselves on the inside. That's all there ever is. You know, addiction is what I call the lost man's way to enlightenment. You know, it's like it's really pointing us home. You know, it's like a longing inside of us that we don't understand. And we innocently test out all these things on the outside, and some of them become habitual. But what we're really looking for is the connection with ourselves, the love within ourselves, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I think a lot of people are going, okay, Jason, I've never loved myself. I've, you know, and I'm gonna speak from personal experience for folks, 'cause I know I'm not the only one, but I hated myself for years, And I was a little fat kid. That was me. And, you know, I kind of went through that and then chose certain relationships where, you know, it didn't work out so well because I hated myself. And so some folks might be thinking right now, like, okay, where do we even start with finding peace? Where do we even find this like enjoyment with myself when it's so hard to be with myself? What would you say to folks in this conundrum?
See, what I share is not a technique or a way of fixing yourself, because you're not broken to start with. You know, nobody's broken. You know, it's like all this experience. Like, how can you know? One of the chapters in my book is called Why You Are Beautiful and You Don't Know It. You know, it's kind of like, because there's no such thing as low self-worth, even though people do would say it's real and they experience it. Low self-worth is another illusion of the mind. You know, it's like, what is it that tells you've got low self-worth apart from your own thinking? You know, it's like, it's just another thought. And it's like, and if you see thought for the truth of what it is, a transient energy that comes to you in the sound of your own voice in your own mind randomly, you know, it's kind of like, why would you even listen to that? You know, it's kind of like, what relevance is it to the truth of who you are? Now, all these things sound kind of abstract in a way, and perhaps not of that much value to somebody unless they have some sort of insight. Because I'm always saying to people, don't listen to my words. I don't want you to take my word for this. What I want is look inside yourself. And that is the first fundamental important thing in my work, is that we stop looking outside to change all the circumstances, and we start looking inwardly at the creation of our experience that happens inside. And what we realize is that there's no outside world. Nothing's happening outside without my perception. You know, it's kind of like, and what I'm feeling and living inside is my perception of an objective world. Now, all experience is created inside of me. So the idea that I have low self-worth is just that, an idea. It's an idea created by me and experienced by me within me. And the truth is that an objective world has been created because there's money involved in fixing people with low self-worth, right? So people have come up with a solution innocently. Like you said, nobody's got bad intentions, but it's like they've innocently come up with a solution to low self-worth that when we feel we've got low self-worth, we then go and buy into, and we take courses for low self-worth and work with coaches and therapists for low self-worth, who will also confirm that we're broken and we need fixing because they don't understand themselves. The truth is that self-worth is an illusion. You know, there's no such thing. You can't have or not have self-worth. Everyone is the same. You know, everyone is equally worthy, because that's our birthright. That's our innate nature. It's who we are, you know.
I when I realized this whole concept of I created my whole internal story of who I was, it was mind blowing. I'm going to be honest. And folks are listening, you guys, it takes a bit, right? You got to kind of look in and be like, is this true about me? How can this be true? And there's different books that tell you the different questions to ask yourself if you really need something to ask yourself. But really, it's crazy how the medical system has almost manipulated us to stay sick, to stay addicted, to stay in certain manners. And well-intentioned people, but the system just twisted us to kind of further support that the stories that you tell yourself. Let's go with that. The stories that you tell yourself, the system's like, great, let's label it and give you a diagnosis and medication with it.
Create the problem and the solution.
Exactly.
That's
Exactly.
man's infinite creativity, right? I mean, Thomas Insull, I don't know if you know Dr. Thomas Insull, he was the head of the National Institute for Mental Health for like 15 years. There was a quote that he made. He said, like, all other areas of science and the medical field have progressed massively over the last 20 years. He said, and in mental health, we've spent $20 billion and we have not even moved the needle. He said, and we're going to have to stop using labels because they're just fabrications of reality and there is no reality. That's one of the things that he said. Now, I say to people, don't take my word for it. If you need credentials, this guy's the top of the chain. And he's even saying stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's many people saying stuff like Alan Francis was one of the creators, the task force on the DSM creation, and he's
Wow.
written a book called Saving Normal, you know, and he's even said that it's a complete fabrication. You know, the whole system, like it's becoming more known now, you know, that this stuff is not helpful, you know.
Yeah. No, the DSM guys, if you're listening, that is a book that's used, and I have like four. Because I gave up after four, the fourth version of it, because I didn't want to look at it anymore. Because I just feel like, yeah, everything's a story, and it's a little hard to hear. And I know that a lot of people are probably listening to this right now and going, "There's no way that my addiction is because of this, or there's no way that my eating issue is because of this. I'm not overweight because of this." And I know a lot of people are also going to be like, "Doc, you know, I have chronic pain because I had a motor vehicle accident 20 years ago. That's why I have pain." And
Sure.
it's hard. It's a hard pill. It's a hard pill to swallow on this, literally.
It is. And that's why I say, don't listen to my words. You know, it's kind of like when you're listening to argue, you know, to see why it's not right and stuff. You know, that's like my moment where he said to me, "Can you just be present?" You know, it's kind of like it's really just letting these words just drift over you. And when we decide something is not true, we don't consider it again. You know, we've just decided it's not true. But when we just leave ourselves open to reflection, could it just be true? Don't listen to my words, but just consider for yourself. You know, it's kind of like, is there anything interesting here in this conversation that could be relevant to me? Just consider, because none of us know what we don't know. And that's the truth, you know?
Right. It's absolutely true. I like to spend the experiment of if I told myself all these other things about myself, where would I be today for a second, and then go, okay, I probably could have created that reality too. But there's no point in going back, obviously, because I don't want to create any more discord in my brain on that. But it is huge. And I think one of the biggest things that I'm sure you find too is that we've lost this ability to have our power with our own mental and physical health. And it's because of the stories and because of all of this labeling. And I believe that modern medicine has its value in terms of, you know, if your leg's falling off, obviously we need advancements. But I feel like we've been duped big time in a lot of the mental and physical aspects of how health care evolves and the addictions that happen because of certain issues. I mean, it's why we have, let me ask you this. In Washington State, where I actually practice, in Tacoma, Washington, we have homeless camps everywhere. How, and it's, we have this opioid problem, you know, and we need to solve the opioid problem. I'm like, whew, I don't think it's a Obviously, I don't think it's a drug issue. It's what these folks have been through in their life and the stories they tell themselves. Do you guys have that sort of issue in the UK? A lot of homeless camps, things of that nature?
We have like homeless shelters and stuff like that, where people who are homeless can perhaps get somewhere to stay. And sometimes at cold times of year, they set up ad hoc type of experiences to feed people, give them somewhere to stay for the night and things like that. Yeah, I mean, that sort of stuff. And I think in more recent years, people have become charities, have set up, to try and support people and things like that. I don't know the numbers or anything, but yeah, there's a certain amount of that for homelessness for sure.
Do you know of anyone that's working with homeless folks, addiction, that's actually talking about, hey, let's talk about your thoughts?
No, I teach on a charity called A Slice of Happiness, and they originally started off going out to the homeless, but they now take people from the job center, which is anyone that's kind of out of work that's looking, and they get referred into them, and they do like an 8-week course. It's like where and we do I do talk on there about the same stuff, and they have other people who talk about it, and it's just trying to get in, break through the mainstream, because as like I'm trying to introduce this idea to people that their identity is wrapped up in what they teach, so oh no, people are, they're very invested in people being broken, and if anything challenges that, there's resistance to it, but they've done a great job in getting through that and actually being able to get people referred into it. So that's one that I know. I mean, there are certain services, people teach it in schools and prisons too, and things like that. There's plenty of that going around,
Good. I wanted folks to hear that, because here's what happens. I try really hard to not get shut down on Instagram and things I say, because unfortunately, folks, there's censorship out there. It's real. And whenever I say something contrary to the conventional thought process, there's a lot of thought around, how can everything that I thought was true be a fabrication? How can, and a lot of shame around that too, I would say.
Yeah.
How do you deal with folks and help folks with have a lot of shame around, oh my God, I believe my stories for so long and it put me in this place?
No one cares what you know until they know that you care, And that's kind of the truth for sure, It's like that you can't, I'm a bit of, perhaps maybe you'd seem similar to me in that, like, I don't mind dropping a few bombs, it's kind of like here and there if I'm with professionals and stuff, it's kind of like, but if I'm with a person or a group of people, it's like the first thing I do is listen and be present and let people feel my care and love, and my attempts to help before I try and gently point to stuff. And I think that the pointing has to be very gentle rather than kind of radical, because it's kind of like when you introduce a radical new idea to someone who's been suffering, let's say somebody's had an addiction all their life, they come into your practice and you go, yeah, it's all just an illusion and a fabrication and there's nothing wrong with you. It's kind of the first thing they do is shut down. They don't want to talk to you. They don't want to lie. But there's a gentle way, this is what I found over the years, because I was a bit of a steamroller or a sledgehammer, to start off with, it's like, and I noticed people were reacting badly to that, it's kind of like, so I had to refine my own pointing, what I call my pointer, where I'm pointing to and how I'm pointing to it, so yeah, I like, it may trigger, like you said, people listening, it's like, and it's everything is divine. One thing I wanted to say when you were talking before was that all pain, all suffering, all struggles, it's all, you can never get enough of what you don't want. I love that saying, you can never get enough of what you don't want, because everything you don't want is pointing you somewhere else, right? Life is always pointing you back to yourself. And it's like, we innocently try and find peace everywhere else. And it's like, life keeps smacking us around the head and going, nope, not this way, not this way. Like, this is the same with chronic pain. It's the same with addiction. It's the same with struggling. It's the same with relationships. We're always being pointed back to our true self, to our true nature, to who we are. And it's like, when we accept rather than resist life, we're always pointed back inwardly. And no one can force you to hear this stuff. You have to be open to hearing something new. Can you just open your mind that little bit, just to consider that this there might be something here interesting. Just that much is enough for somebody to hear something of like you said, absolute mind-blowing value,
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. Just being open. So folks are listening. I know that you probably listen to me say this stuff and go, and it took me, like, no joke, it took me 5 years to really accept the fact that I told myself a lot of stories that weren't true about myself. And it was a lot of work to really be like, okay, cool. How do I change it? And slowly but surely we're getting there. And so folks who are listening, you guys, Jason has a podcast where he talks all these things. And I saw that you bring on lots of folks in different realms to talk about what's going on. And so folks, I think the best thing, and this is kind of what I immersed myself in, is everybody, because like I said, I'm a serial course taker. Everybody that's really helping you to understand literally the best topic of your podcast name, Misunderstandings of the Mind, and how we've misunderstood, misinterpreted, confused in our head the stories that we tell ourselves. And so your whole podcast series is what I want folks to really think about. Listen in.
It's all every podcast is pretty much the same, but it co starts in a different place. It starts at anxiety, it starts at addiction, it starts at depression, but they all come to the place of true nature is never damaged. Who we are, we all have innate, perfect, undamageable mental health. I'm not talking about mental illness, which is the concept of the traditional world. I'm talking about mental health, a place of perfection inside of us that cannot be damaged, cannot be scratched, no matter what we've done, no matter how long we've done it for. There's a place of absolute perfection inside of every single human being. And that's where they all end up, and that's what I love about it.
That's amazing. Guys, you got to go check out Jason's podcast, Misunderstandings of the Mind. And it's misunderstandingsofthemind.com too, for them to find everything. Where else can they find you to get more info, get in, and just really start to hear your message that you're putting out there?
That's the best place, really, the podcast. If anyone wants to ask me anything, you can find my contact details on there. For anyone with addiction, I've got an addiction treatment program called the Infinite Recovery Project. It's on the infiniterecoveryproject.com, which is really treating addiction from the inside out. It's a model of health versus a model of illness. It's helping you see what's right with you versus fixing what's wrong with you. It's a completely different way. And there's some stuff on there about addiction that I've written worth a look, if anyone wants to read. And I'm always open if anyone's really curious, I'm always open to speak to people.
I love it. I love it. This is my jam in terms of changing the mind. And this is incredible stuff that can help guys with any aspect of your health, just like Jason said. Jason, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your story, but also getting real with us and just helping people be, get that peace and comfort that they're searching for, helping put that pointer in the right direction. That's how I wanted to say that one.
Thank you. I always appreciate it. If it can just make a difference in one person's life, I'm all good for that,
High five to that. High five to that.
Awesome.
Hey, fellow health junkie, thanks for listening to the Health Fix podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please help support me to get the word out about the podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review, and just get that word out. Thanks again for listening.